Good afternoon and welcome to everybody. Recently, an article of mine on Patanjali and the stars came in as an opinion piece in the Times of India. And based upon that, I thought of revising my lengthy article, which I had written couple of months ago, and hence I thought of putting everything together into this one piece called Understanding the Deep Science in Patanjali Yoga Sutras, and that is what I'm going to talk today about. And I hope you enjoy this little lengthy piece, but it puts in perspective all that I have done and I have studied Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Sage Patanjali has been my teacher. Whatever little I have written in the last 20 years on spirituality or thought about the interaction of mind and matter and higher things have been inspired by Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and I have always felt that his spirit has guided me in this journey. I will talk a little bit about my teacher in the last section of this talk, and but right now I will delve straight away into who was Patanjali, what is the book about, what is the science, etc., etc. Yoga Sutras is basically a book of life, or how to maximize your living potential. It also teaches a little bit of Hatha Yoga besides maximizing your living potential. But the most important lesson it teaches is how to make the mind, the instrument of comprehension, a very powerful tool so that it can comprehend any secret of the universe. According to me, Patanjali was a true scientist who gave the first knowledge about the control of thought and mind and about universal laws governing time and space. Unfortunately, till now, none of the commentaries on Yoga Sutras have explored them through the lens of science. I feel this talk and this essay that I have written, which I will share the URL of this, will help in overcoming that lacuna. His writings are like an infinite ocean. The more you read them, the deeper is the knowledge. Consequently, I have made a small attempt in trying to understand their science through the publications of my two books, The Nature of Human Thought and Exploring the Mind of God. And both these books are available from Amazon. And this talk is an attempt to explore it further and in depth. So who was Sage Patanjali? We do not know who Patanjali was or when he wrote the sutras, or even what we have today are really his sutras. But reading between the lines or extracting knowledge from them shows the great understanding and sparkling wisdom of his science. Though we will never know the truth of his existence, but his science-based teachings or sutras, which were written more than 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, meant it must have come from a person not of this world. I therefore feel that he may have been an astronaut from an advanced civilization who came to this world to impart great scientific knowledge. This speculation I will explore later in this talk. Thus, whether it is a definition of time, or how the thought can be controlled, or how a powerful mind can be used to discover the secrets of nature, all can be gleaned from his writings and by reading between the lines. Yoga Sutras are not an easy read. They are precise and crisp. India has had a long tradition of passing knowledge from guru to disciple through oral transmission. It can be conjectured that the initial exposition by Patanjali must have been a very detailed one, since the subject matter was difficult. With time, the subsequent commentators made them crisp, since it helped in memorizing the sutras. In this process, it is quite possible that some important information may have been lost. Another possibility is that when people did not understand the science behind these sutras, some important sutras may have been omitted. Thus, one needs to understand or read between the lines with deep knowledge of modern science to fully appreciate their message. I will try to explain this in detail in subsequent talk, or in my talk later on. So what is this book all about? What is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, or the book, is all about and what it says? The book is divided into four sections with a total of 195 sutras. The sections are divided into Samadhipad, or the section 1, containing 51 sutras, Sadhanapad, or section 2, having 55 sutras, Vibhutipad, or section 3, having 56 sutras, and the last section called Kevalyapad has 33 sutras. The first two sections, Samadhi and Sadhana, talk about how to make the mind and body powerful enough so that one can focus on a single thought for a long time. This focus on a single thought leads to Sayam, and Patanjali defines it as a combination of focus, contemplation and Samadhi. In fact, the whole basis of Yoga Sutras is to create conditions to learn about Sayam and to practice it on different parts of the body and on different subjects to get the complete knowledge. The state of Samadhi is reached when the object of focus vanishes and one gets immersed in its essence. That is basically and essentially spirituality, that when the subject or the object vanishes, but only its spirit remains. And that is what is meant by spirituality, that when you go very deep into any subject, this is what happens. The third section, Vibhutipad, is the main section of Yoga Sutras, where the science of yoga is fully developed. In this section, Patanjali talks of using Sanyam on various parts of the body to get supernatural powers, and on different celestial objects or subjects to understand the laws of nature and the universe. I feel Vibhutipad is the real essence of his teachings on the conquest of nature via technology. This section has also inspired me to go on the journey of discovering the interplay of spirituality and technology, about which I have written for the last 20 years in my books and a lot of essays. Since this section is the meat of sutras, I have a feeling that through time it has been tinkered by various commentators. Commentators who did not understand the science either changed some sutras or may have even omitted some of the deep ones. And surprisingly, quite a number of distinguished commentators, including the famous Swami Vivekananda, simply glossed over them. In-depth reading of Vibhutipad also reveals that some sutras are missing in this section, since there is an abrupt change in the subject matter from one sutra to another, and they are arranged in a very haphazard manner. And the last or the fourth section of the book, called Kevalyapad, talks about how using these supernatural powers and understanding the universal laws, a yogi gains liberation from the cycle of birth and death. One of the most important tenets of Indian philosophical system is the liberation of soul, atma, etc. from the cycle of birth and death, and Patanjali shows very clearly how to achieve it. It is also interesting to note that there is no reference to God in the sutras, but only of universal consciousness. So Patanjali has written only seven, or has devoted only seven out of 195 sutras for this universal consciousness. Patanjali defines this universal consciousness as an entity called Ishwar. Basically, the first time he talks about Ishwar is in section 1.23, and he calls it an entity which is beyond time. Interestingly, Patanjali identifies this Ishwar with the original sound pranav. Modern theories of Big Bang suggest that the first signal after the birth of universe was a sound which was like a deep hum, and maybe that could be the reason why the Indian mythology and the Indian yogic system always talks about Om. The hum was nothing like Om, but this came closest to the hum. Yet Patanjali never talks about Om, yet he talks only about pranav, or the original sound. Also, very strangely, the reading of these sutras are mandatory for practitioners of Hatha Yoga or the yoga exercises. However, I feel that the study of yoga sutras has nothing to do with the practicing physical yoga exercises or Hatha Yoga. Patanjali only talks about physical exercise and pranayama in only 5 to 6 sutras out of 195. Thus, yoga sutras should be recommended reading for students of psychology and all physical sciences. It is a really remarkable document on how to live a good and emotionally satisfying life, and therefore should be a recommended reading in all humanities courses. Now I will talk about the science in the Yoga Sutras and show how the science is embedded in some of the sutras. This is based upon my limited understanding of them and is quite speculative in nature. However, it shows that if we approach each sutra from the scientific point of view, then its gem becomes evident. In section 3, 53 to 55 of Vibhuti Pad, Patanjali says, by making sayam on a single moment and on the sequence of moments, a yogi gets vivek, or the exalted knowledge, so that she or he can comprehend all the objects in the universe simultaneously, irrespective of their location and sequence of change, or in other words, the mind of God. And according to John Wheeler, one of the world's foremost experts on relativity, Einstein's theory of gravitation can be simply stated as events, and the interval between events builds space-time. The geometric nature of space-time gives rise to gravity, tells the mass how to move, and is the basis of universe and the movement of all heavenly bodies. And this is what Einstein called the mind of God. Again in Vibhuti Pad, section 3.31, Patanjali says that by doing sayam on the hollow of throat, one conquers hunger and thirst. Recently, scientists have discovered that by stimulation of vagus nerve, hunger pangs can be suppressed. Vagus nerve is concentrated near the esophagus tube, close to the hollow of the throat. Few years ago, US Food and Drug Administration, or US FDA, approved a device which can electrically stimulate the vagus nerve so that the brain gets a signal that the stomach is full. This is quite useful for people who are obese. Similarly, in section 3.43, Patanjali says that by doing sayam on the relationship of body and space, a body could be dissolved cellularly. He says that it becomes light as a cotton fiber and transported from one place to another. This results in the conquest of space. Almost all the abductees, or the people who were abducted by aliens and taken in their airships, experience getting their bodies transported from their home to the alien spacecraft via tunneling and cellular transfer through the walls and glass windows, and this mirrors this sutra quite well. Interestingly, in section 3.40 of Vibhutipad, Patanjali also talks about how doing sanyam on vital currents of a body, a yogi masters the art of floating over water, mud, or thorns without touching them. Superficially, these two sutras, 3.40 and 43, talk about transportation of body through space or some anti-gravity process. Yet, there is a difference. It can be conjectured that Patanjali may be alluding that floating over water, etc., could be done via magnetic levitation, while section 3.43 talks about tunneling and intergalactic space travel. Again, the experiences of abductees have shown how they saw aliens floating over land and other surfaces very effortlessly. This magnetic levitation could be possible if by some mechanism we can make the body a room temperature superconductor so that it could be levitated magnetically in the Earth's magnetic field. Presently, the world does not have this technology. In another sutra, section 3.21, Patanjali says that by doing sanyam on body shape and its changes so that the reflected light does not reach the eyes of the beholder, one can make the body invisible. This process is used in stealth aircraft, where sharp angles and absorption of visible and other spectrum by the aircraft body makes it invisible. And in section 3.35, again of Vibhutipad, Patanjali talks about how doing sanyam on heart gives complete knowledge of consciousness. Recent scientific discoveries have shown a very close connection between the heart and the mind. Similarly, Patanjali talks about how a yogi can read the other person's mind by doing sanyam on his thought structure and also control it. Sutra 3.19. This is being slowly perfected through various processes of artificial intelligence and hypnosis. And in another sutra in Kevalyapad, section 4.1, Patanjali talks about how all the supernatural powers can come to a yogi by taking drugs. Recent studies in the effect of recreational and mind-altering drugs like LSD, etc., have shown enhanced spiritual experiences for drug takers and for some, the experience of entity visitations. To my mind, this discussion on mind-altering drugs in Yoga Sutras is the first such anywhere in any ancient spiritual text. Also in Kevalyapad, sections 4.2, 3 and 9, Patanjali talks about rebirth happening by chance and not because of past karma. This is a major departure from the accepted notion that your birth is dictated by past karma, and it mirrors the regular scientific process by which this is possible. Even some sutras in Samadhi and Sadhanapad, sections 1 and 2 respectively, where Patanjali details the mechanism of thought control and sanyam, if they are examined through the lens of modern day's neuroscience and brain research, then the gems of his teaching becomes even brighter. Thus, his sutras on memory formation and removal, Patanjali calls memory as sanskars, and the nature of human thought tallies closely with what we know today about the production and nature of human thought, again about which I have written a book and in different essays. Similarly, there are other sutras whose knowledge seems to be vindicated by the modern science. I think a whole book can be written about their relevance to modern science and technology. So there is a need to study Vibhutipad more thoroughly, since many secrets in it still need to be rediscovered. The comparison of Patanjali's sutras with modern science is neither to glorify our ancient tradition nor to belittle the latter. Both are important in their own way. but to show that all great knowledge originates from the same knowledge space, irrespective of the person and the time of its discovery. Also, this comparison helps establish the value and authenticity of the scientific aspect of sutras and gives credence to the fact that other sutras may hold secrets which could be revealed if studied thoroughly. This revelation may perhaps show the path to new understanding of natural laws and novel inventions, and is the main reason why we are trying to read between the lines in these ancient texts. Now I will talk about, since I have discussed this before in my talk, this talk on Patanjali, that was Sage Patanjali an extraterrestrial astronaut? In all the natural supernatural powers that are described in Vibhutipad have uncanny resemblance with those exhibited by aliens, and hence one can speculate that probably Patanjali was also an alien and out of this world. In the seminal book on extraterrestrial abductions of humans by UFO inhabitants, John Mack, a very famous former professor of Harvard University, had shown that all the persons abducted and taken inside the spaceships, they are called abductees, talked about extraterrestrials floating in air, could interact telepathically with them, could read their minds and modify them, become invisible, and exhibited almost all the powers written in Vibhutipad of Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Similar reporting of abductees' experiences was also done by Carol and Jim Lorenzen in their book, Encounters with UFO Occupants. This similarity between the powers written in Yoga Sutras and exhibited by extraterrestrials is so uncanny that I strongly feel that Sage Patanjali could have been an extraterrestrial being who came to Earth almost 2,500 to 3,000 years ago to give us this knowledge. In fact, Patanjali alludes to extraterrestrials in Vibhutipad, section 3.52, when he says that a yogi, when approached by celestial beings, should neither be surprised nor get attached to them because they are hindrance to his salvation. Interestingly, this sutra is at the end of Vibhutipad, so that the yogi is supposed to have acquired nearly all the powers attributed to the extraterrestrials. Thus, he or she can interact as equals with them and ward off their influence, rather than being overwhelmed by their powers, as most abductees have described. Thus, if we understand how a yogi can get these supernatural powers and understand space-time and universe, then it may show us a possible way to understand mind-matter interaction and probably pave the way for developing galactic travel technologies. Unidentified flying objects or UFOs are real. There have been innumerable sightings and visitations by extraterrestrials throughout the history of mankind. In Indian scriptures like Ramayana and Mahabharata, there are quite a few descriptions of various gods visiting Earth in their flying machines. And recently, US government has officially released video clippings of few of these sightings. Similarly, a recent series of Netflix documentaries has further shown the possibility of these visitations and mankind's quest for understanding the technologies of UFO propulsion. Propulsion technology used by UFOs effortlessly overcomes Earth's gravitational pull, and understanding it may help us produce unlimited renewable energies on this planet for our needs and benefits. Hence, it is necessary that we invest money and resources in discovering and understanding them. I firmly believe that the future of mankind is to become a galactic traveling civilization, and mastering of the technology to do so can only come when we develop the wisdom through spirituality to use it wisely. And now I'll talk about Patanjali's sutras on stars, because since we have a thesis that he may have been extraterrestrial, so I thought he would put it, so it is but natural to find his discussion on stars. Another tantalizing indication of why Patanjali was an astronaut comes from the fact that in three short sutras, he also talks about stars. One can ask that in a book about mind control and yoga, what is the relevance of knowledge of stars? Obviously, Patanjali showed that we are what we think. Once the power of comprehension is mastered by the control of thought, then all the knowledge of the world becomes easy to understand. Besides, knowledge of stars was necessary for intergalactic space travel, and hence his discussion on the stars. However, Patanjali could have left it at that, but he wanted on to explain about the knowledge of space and time, and it included stars. He explained that this knowledge could be obtained by understanding sun, moon, and polar stars. I also think there must have been more sutras about other celestial objects, but somehow they are missing from the book. So in Vibhutipad, section 3.27, Patanjali has written that doing sanyam on sun, one obtains knowledge of universe, celestial spaces, or akash. This is an interesting concept. Since akash or celestial space focus is far removed from the life-giving rays of the sun, which comes in various frequencies, and also the sun emits other cosmic rays and particles. Maybe Patanjali conjectured that the knowledge of sun and how it produces energy may tell us everything about atomic energy, plasma physics, gravity, and other deep science, and hence the focus on universe in this sutra. It can also be conjectured that he may have meant space-time continuing or gravity, since what pervades in all space is gravity. And if the sayam is done on sun, the greatest gravity source in our solar system, then we may understand space-time continuum or the nature of gravity. This is also detailed in Sutras 3:53-55, which come much later than the discussion on stars. He also talks about moon, section 3.28, and says that by doing sanyam on moon, a yogi gets knowledge of the arrangement of planets. Newton discovered gravity by thinking how moon goes around the earth, and the falling apple from the tree gave him the idea of gravity and about the motion of planets. Similarly, Patanjali talks about pole star, section 3.29, and says that sayam on it will help a yogi understand the movement of all stars and planets. Pole stars through ages have been used not only for navigation on this planet Earth, but also to map the skies. It is really remarkable that in three short sutras, Patanjali talks about universe or celestial space and movement of planets, and this was much before the time of Copernicus, Plato, Socrates, and Newton. Since we are talking in detail about the Yoga Sutras, I also thought it will be interesting to talk about some major omissions in sutras. There are a lot of sutras which I think are missing, because, and I have explained this in my talk, but there's a major omission. And one of the glaring omissions in Yoga Sutras is there is no mention about Kundalini Yoga. Kundalini Yoga is an important part of the Tantric Yoga system, where yogis believe that through the extremely small central canal called Sushma Nadi or spinal cord, sexual chemicals from its base can be raised to reach the brain, where they enhance the communication of neural pathways so that all the parts of brain work in unison and one can attain samadhi. This is similar to what takes place in the brain during the LSD episode, though the user taking the drug has no control over his or her experience. Yogis also believe that sexual energy is coiled at the base of spine, hence the name Kundalini, or it is called as coiled energy, snake, etc. They believe it can be raised in the central canal or the Sushumna Nadi by will. It seems little strange that sage Patanjali, who was the first to enunciate the yoga principles of thought control and mind enhancement, would not have included the science of Kundalini Yoga in it. There could be, however, two reasons for such an omission. One could be that Patanjali did not believe in Kundalini Yoga as a real physical phenomena. I have written in depth about this in one of the articles, and the URL has been put in this article of mine on Patanjali. And the other speculation could be that probably that section could have been extracted by some commentators from his sutras and made into a separate science of Tantric Yoga. After all, the whole of Vibhuti Path is Tantra or technique of getting supernatural powers, and the description of Kundalini Yoga would have been very appropriate in it. Now I come to my last section, and I'll talk about my teacher, the sage Patanjali. I've been greatly inspired by his sutras, and I felt that his spirit has guided me in my quest for spirituality. Hence, I would like to briefly write about him. Obviously, I never met or knew Patanjali, but knew him through his yoga sutras. Just like Eklavya, who learned his archery by practicing in front of the statue of Dronacharya, I have learned about the science of yoga by imagining that the spirit of Patanjali is guiding me. A great teacher is one who allows his disciple to go through the rough and tumble of learning process, but his guiding hand is always available to show the correct path. So many times when I have been in doubt, I have repeatedly gone to Patanjali's Yoga Sutras and discovered the hidden gems. I guess all great books are teachers in this sense. I came to know Patanjali at the age of 14 when I read his Yoga Sutras in a book by Thaimini. It was called The Science of Yoga, which I borrowed from the public library in Lucknow. Yoga Sutras is a very difficult book to read, and more so since most of the commentators have explained the great science of thought and mind control in an extremely confusing way, since most of them had no knowledge of science of mind control. Their explanations were all clothed in mythology. A great teacher sometimes has the maximum impact when the student is very sharp. A disciple elicits information from the teacher depending upon his or her intelligence. A great teacher, therefore, is like an ocean of knowledge, but you can only take the amount of knowledge depending upon the size of your container or the brain power. At the age 14, when I was first introduced to my teacher, I could hardly understand what he meant. But somehow, I intuitively understood that following his teachings, one can get superhuman powers like flying, omniscience, mind reading, and energy of thunderbolt for one's body, among others. Now, which 14-year-old does not want such powers? And this is what attracted me to Patanjali. I then got sidetracked by my technology education in IIT Kanpur, but his teachings must have remained at the back of my mind, and they exerted an invisible pull. So when the time was ripe, I again went back to him for knowledge. Since then, every time I have doubts about some aspects of science of mind, I have gone to Patanjali's sutras and have discovered new gems. With time, my container has also expanded a little bit, and thus I can absorb more of his knowledge. Thus, Friends, what I have shown in this talk is a tip of iceberg as regards the wisdom and genius of Sage Patanjali. What is needed further is to trace the history and origins of his sutras so that a comprehensive system of it is established, and to study in depth his available sutras through the lens of modern science and technology. I must really thank you for listening to this talk, and do hope that you also get inspired by Patanjali's Yoga Sutras as much as I have done. Thank you very much.